This is Jacinta Parsons on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
If there are no tourists going out to some of the regional areas in this country, how do Indigenous artists that live in those areas sell their work directly? Giving us an answer to that and how we might actually support some of those artists in ensuring that we're purchasing Indigenous art ethically. Stephanie Parkin joins us. She's the chair of the Indigenous Art Code. Good afternoon, Stephanie.
Good afternoon, Jacinta. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on because this is sort of one of those areas that is complex regardless as to how to ensure that the artwork that you're buying, especially from Indigenous Australians, is actually sourced and the money goes back to where it was found. How do we navigate it?
Yes, you're right, Jacinta. At times it can be quite a difficult and complex thing to try and navigate, particularly for purchasers. But I think the good thing is that consumers do have a lot of power in this space in terms of being able to ask the right questions of those retailers and those who are selling Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander products and also licensed merchandise. It's something that the Indigenous Art Code, something that we've launched recently, which really speaks to helping to navigate those channels, and this is the new campaign called Our Art is Our Lifeline. So as you mentioned, it's a national campaign, and through this campaign we're encouraging the purchase of artwork by Indigenous artists, and really at a time where COVID has impacted the ability for artists to be able to produce their works and also sell them and to generate sales from their works. So this campaign really is about encouraging the engagement, continued engagement with artists and their artworks and the purchasing of their artworks, and also to ensure and think about the ethical and transparent channels through which these artworks move. Through engagement with our online campaign, we are encouraging members of the public to think about those channels that they buy things through. And one of the ways that we're suggesting that this can be done is through those dealers who are members of the Indigenous Art Code. And on our website, indigenousartcode.org, we have a list of our Indigenous Art Code members who have, really demonstrated a commitment to upholding principles of fair and ethical trading. So we are encouraging members of the public to really, research those channels and engage with artists through those methods.
How many organisations and galleries and sellers do you have that are part of that community of the Indigenous Art Code?
Yeah, look, we do. I think we've got about, over 100 artists as well, and also I think pushing nearly 200 dealer members. So our membership is broken up into different categories. So we have members who are Indigenous artists. So these are artists that members of the public can purchase from directly. And then also Indigenous-owned businesses as well. So this would then cover things like Indigenous-owned art centres and governed art centres as well. And then we also have categories of membership that people can look for as well for other member dealers. So those who engage with work and sell the artwork through broader channels. So there's different levels of categories through the Indigenous Art Code, and as I mentioned, viewing our member register, members of the public can, interact with each of those different members and, hopefully find a beautiful piece of artwork that that speaks to them as well.
Your relationship with First Nation artists, what are you hearing about the impact that this has had? Is tourism the greatest impact? Are there other things that are creating pressure points at the moment?
Yeah, look, there's probably a whole range of things. I think you're right, just into tourism. So a lot of the foot traffic that a lot of artists, art centres, galleries, exhibitions would normally engage with during these times throughout the normal year, those have obviously been cancelled or moved to online spaces. So for a lot of major events, we've seen the Darwin Aboriginal Art Fair that's just finished up, that has now moved to an online space. The Cairns Indigenous Art Fair, which is on now, again, moving to an online space. For a lot of artists, though, as well, who would have relied on sales through galleries around Australia, they're obviously feeling hit from COVID as well. Simply, this means that the opportunities for them to promote and sell their works have either diminished completely or are quite minimal. We've had some statistics through from Injilac Arts, who's an art centre located up in Western Arnhem Land, and they've reported an 84% drop in sales for July this year compared to last year, and a 76% drop in sales for April to August for this year compared to last year as well. So when we're hearing those type of statistics coming out, you know, from, you know, just one art centre, you know, the flow-on effect that that has to artists and local economies, you know, is quite significant. And so I think that's really why the messaging around this campaign of Our Art is Our Lifeline is really speak to that. And I, as I mentioned, it's a, really about encouraging members of the public to continue that engagement with artists and their art practices, and also, you know, the cultural fabric that sits within Australia.
Well, it's a really wonderful service that you provide. People interested in supporting First Nation artists and some of the artwork that you can get from right around the country. If people want to find out more and ensure that their purchase is ethical and it's doing exactly as it should, indigenousartco.org is where you go. And to find out more about Our Art is Our Lifeline, thank you very much for joining us, Stephanie.
Thanks very much, Jacinta. Thanks for having me.